88% of the workweek is spent communicating, typing, talking, and going back and forth on topics until everyone is on the same page. It's time for a change. It's time for Grammarly. Grammarly's AI ensures your team gets the point across the first time, eliminating misunderstandings and streamlining collaboration. It goes beyond basic grammar to help tailor writing to specific audiences. Whether that means adding an executive summary, fine-tuning tone, or cutting out jargon in just one click. 4 out of 5 professionals say Grammarly's AI boosts buy-in and moves work forward. It integrates seamlessly with over 500,000 apps and websites, is implemented in days, and is IT approved. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who trust Grammarly to elevate their communication. Visit grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly, enterprise ready AI.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
A Factual Data Creation Facility production.
Welcome to the OFNT Podcast, episode 240, which I'm calling iPad Mini Skinny. Yeah, we all know who finally updated the iPad Mini.
Yay!
I celebrated a birthday yesterday and went out to eat, and of course I overdid it. That caused me to spend the majority of the rest of the day nodding in and out of sleep. We've been busy getting quotes from moving services and such, and it looks like we'll finally be pulling up stakes in early November. Well, enough about me now. Let's get this show started.
Yeah, boy.
Before I do get started, I have a correction. Last week, I mistakenly announced the title of the last episode as being Google Destruction Inbound. Consider the correct title, Google Deconstruction Inbound. Perhaps this was a Freudian slip. Anyway, the Big G does seem to be getting attacked on multiple fronts these days.
Yes.
And that makes me wonder what the company's sin or sins were that prompted these attacks. Also, while listening to the last episode to see how it sounded in the car, there were a couple of advertisements that I found not to my taste. I've stated this before and I'll state it again, I guess. If it's not my voice in the ad, I have nothing to do with it. And I don't endorse whatever is being sold, be it goods or services, or, in this case, votes. Tech news. I'm going to start off with some Apple news, being that the giant fruit company was the dominant party of my news feeds. First up, Apple surprisingly announced the new updated iPad Mini via a lowly press release last week. This has led many amongst the tech press to question whether there will even be an Apple event this month, as has been rumored.
Aww.
Oh well, they'll probably do some sort of Halloween-type event like last year, where they'll introduce the new MacBook Pros. Speaking of which, one model has already been leaked big time by some Russian blogger who happened to get his hands on an actual 14-inch version. What I've seen of the video, Apple could save some money by just doing another press release. Besides the new M4 chip and the smaller version being available in black,
wow,
the upgrades appear to be minor. Unless Apple has something else up its sleeves. Okay, back to the highly anticipated iPad mini. SixColors.com has an article running down all the changes to the smallest iPad, and there really weren't many. The mini didn't even receive the latest A-series chip. Apple opted to give it last year's A17 Pro.
What?
Which powers the iPhone 15 Pro. To add insult to injury, or is it injury to insult? This A17 Pro appears to be what's called a bin chip, meaning these are the lower performing chips of the entire run, having 6 versus the 8 processing cores of the top performing A17 Pro chips.
What?
That just shows you how Apple feels about the iPad mini. Despite a small but vocal fandom of this model, sales numbers don't justify significant investment in upgrades for it. I recall a similar loud fan base for a small pro-level iPhone. Well, Apple actually made one, but as we know now, not many bought it. At least not enough of them to prevent it from being canceled after 2 generations. Other upgrades for the iPad mini are Wi-Fi 6E, Bluetooth 5.3, 120 gigs of RAM, which is up from the 64 gigs of the older models, and an 8.3-inch liquid retina display. Most tech companies predicted the mini would be getting an OLED display like the current iPhones.
No.
The new iPad mini has 12 megapixel cameras front and back, but the front camera is still mounted horizontally and isn't a center stage camera. Heck, even the base model iPad camera has those things. The new mini can now only use the Apple Pencil Pro. Besides the normal space gray and starlight finishes, a new blue color was added, along with a paler than before purple shade. It's assumed that this iPad will come with 8 gigabytes of RAM based on it running on an A17 Pro chip, and of course in order to it to run Apple Intelligence. A smart folio type case will be available also. The base model starts at $499 and goes up, way up from there. A fully outfitted mini with cellular capability will cost around $800. I have the feeling that Apple, like the iPhone mini before it, would like to be rid of the iPad mini. Again, because it just doesn't sell nearly as well as the other iPads in the lineup, so they're just going to reuse spare inventory parts for constructing it. And that's all in order to keep the small but vocal minority somewhat happy. As I've said before, I previously used 2 iPad minis in the past, but larger iPhones and the ability to use web versions of most apps kind of killed the novelty of using a small iPad, well, at least for me. There will be no iPad mini Pro model coming in the future, and in time, no iPad mini at all. And that's my uneducated opinion. From 9to5Mac.com comes the headline. There's a new Apple Intelligent smart home device and strategy coming in 2025. Report, unquote. Citing Apple analysis du jour, Mark Gurman, who wrote in his Power On newsletter, Apple has 3 pillars in its new home automation strategy, and they are: number 1, Apple Intelligence, with a heavy Siri focus. Number 2, Home OS, a new software platform built on tvOS. And 3, broader accessory compatibility with the Matter Home Automation Standard, making that possible. Concerning Siri, the old gal will be given the power to manipulate features inside apps, meaning you could perform a huge set of iPhone, iPad, and Mac actions without physically using those devices. You just talk out loud from anywhere within your home. You know, do you or I really need this functionality? Again, artificial intelligence seems to be an answer to a problem no one actually has. 2 smart displays are on the way. One cheap enough for us unwealthy people, and another for the well-off amongst us. The poor person's version will allow you to play Apple TV Plus content, do FaceTime calls, surf the web, and access apps like Calendar and Notes. It will have an iPad-like screen, and consumers could place multiple units around the house. Well, I'm not paying $500 for each separate Apple smart display to replace my current Amazon Echo Array. So lower price has to mean between $100 and $200. And we know that's not going to happen.
No.
We are talking Apple here. The more expensive tabletop device would run you upwards of $1,000.
What?
And focus on home security monitoring, advanced video conferencing, and media playback with high quality audio. The display would be positioned atop a swiveling robotic limb.
Okay.
Well, I'll be sticking with what I have now. Affordable and dependable Amazon Echoes. With or without AI. In a I told you so sort of story, AndroidAuthority.com headlines an article, Google scores massive reprieve in Epic case. No big Play Store changes yet, unquote. In the last episode, I ran down a judge's edict against the Big G, which would have seriously curtailed their Play Store operations, potentially costing the tech behemoth millions if not billions of dollars. These edicts were to have gone into effect this November, which didn't give Google much time to implement them. At the end of my report, I mentioned that things move slow in lawfare and that Google would appeal. Well, that's exactly what happened, so I told you so.
Yes?
Google filed a motion to stay the injunction that demanded sweeping changes to the Play Store, but there's always a but. Google still can't make any deals which would prohibit third-party Play Stores on new phones. Google managed to extend the stay and have to succeed in its appeal if it wants to permanently resist these changes. For the companies that were looking forward to this new open landscape, which includes Microsoft, I might add, they'll just have to put their plans on ice. Well, at least for now. I remember the days when companies like Nokia, Microsoft, Android, and others would beg developers to put apps on their platforms. Well, times have surely changed. The original Google Meet app is dead. Long live the original Google Meet app. This action was taken because though the original Google Meet app was the most popular amongst Android and non-Android users, the Google Duo app, remember that app, had many more installs, 5 billion versus the 500 million for the original Meet app. That could be attributed to Duo being pre-installed on many Android phones from many different manufacturers. So to solve this conundrum, Google waved its magic app wand and turned Duo into the Meet app. They kept the original Meet app around for the enterprise market, who are apparently still using Meet in its original clean form. Google continues to update the new Meet app, bringing features previously reserved for corporate clients to the personal version. We're a Zoom-free family, so we use the original Google Meet app during the dark days of COVID and beyond. That is until we became unified behind iOS and its FaceTime app. But who knows what the future may bring with my grandchildren on the cusp of coming of age. We might return to Meet if circumstances dictate. So pour one out for an older app that many use through some hard times. 9to5google.com was the source used for this story. Now this next story is a very important one. Well, only if you're a big fan of the chain restaurant Chick-fil-A. The headline of an article from 9to5mac.com reads, "You can now order Chick-fil-A using CarPlay."
Oh, yes.
Boy, technology is great, isn't it?
Yes.
From the article, for months, Chick-fil-A has been testing and teasing its first ever CarPlay app. Now the day has finally come and you can officially place your favorite Chick-fil-A order using nothing but CarPlay.
Yes!
Using the new Chick-fil-A app via CarPlay, you can view nearby locations and place an order for drive-thru, inside pickup, or curbside pickup, unquote. Oh, the joy this app will bring. The app will automatically select the default payment method saved to your Chick-fil-A account. Heck, I wasn't even aware that you could have an account with them. Or your Chick-fil-A One balance, whatever that is. But you can't have it all because you won't be able to peruse the full menu. You'll have to either repeat a recent order or choose from your saved favorites.
Aww.
Well, that's a bummer. To have access to the full menu, you'll have to open the app on your phone. And who can be bothered doing that during these modern times, I ask you? You can obtain this breakthrough app by downloading the latest version of the Chick-fil-A app from your friendly neighborhood app store. Tell them Jim sent you, and you'll receive absolutely nothing in return. Hey, have you finally gotten a phone compatible with 5G? Or has your wireless provider just recently gotten aboard with 5G? Well, according to an article from AndroidAuthority.com, 5G is yesterday's news as T-Mobile has just announced 5.5G, better known as 5G Advanced. The new 5.5G standard promises faster speeds, high precision finding, and energy efficiency. Well, that's the good news. The bad news is that you'll most likely need a new phone in order to be able to utilize this new 5.5G network. T-Mobile will be rolling out the 5.5G network this year. And here I remember being perfectly happy with 3G. Unfortunately for me, the new area which I'm moving to has spotty coverage with T-Mobile. Well, thank goodness for my excellent internet service down there. We finally have a color Kindle as the entire e-reader lineup gets a refresh, unquote. And this is from AndroidPolice.com. This comes too late for me as I just don't read as much as I used to. Amazon announced 4 new upgraded Kindle models. The new Kindle ColorSoft, which as the name suggests, has a display that uses a somewhat muted version of Color e-ink. I guess if you read comics or graphic novels, this will be a must-have. As for just straight reading, well, not so much. It'll set you back $280. The huge new Kindle Scribe comes with 3 classes of memory, 16 gigs, 32 gigs, and 64 gigs. If you're not familiar, the Scribe allows you to annotate and write on it. I guess it's good for note-taking and the like. Of course, to better translate your scribbling into something readable, the Scribe has onboard AI to accomplish this. It also comes with the pen you'll need for that aforementioned scribbling. The base model will cost you $400 of your hard-earned dollars, putting the Scribe squarely in iPad territory. The completely tricked-out model will cost you $450. Next was the upgraded Kindle Paperwhite, which really hasn't received much of an upgrade besides a slight increase in size. It will cost you $160 for the standard models and $200 for the signature model. I take it that signature means no ads. A basic Kindle model was added for the great unwashed masses, whose main feature was new colors. My personal favorite, the Kindle Voyager, has been discontinued. This leaves no Kindles with physical buttons to turn pages. It's swipe or die going forward. If I ever decide to once again become an avid reader, I'll just dust off my old Voyager. We have a history. We go way back. My first e-reader was a Sony James Bond 007 Special Edition model. It was built like a tank. Sony, eager to get into the market in those days, gave away a free book monthly. I attempted to read through Game of Thrones on that Sony reader. The big problem with Sony was that you had to hook it up to a PC in order to download books onto it. Eventually, I picked up the original Kindle, you know, the one with a keyboard. That after Amazon cut its price in half. The thing that made the Kindle stand out, well, at least for me, was that it was equipped with what they called WhisperNet, which was based on AT&T's old 2G network. I can recall downloading books while at work. Eventually, Wi-Fi replaced WhisperNet, but what if there was no Wi-Fi available? Which was the case where I worked. I replaced that original with a Paperwhite before getting my current Voyager, which is probably the last Kindle I'll ever buy. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission, following the state of California's lead, has implemented a click-to-cancel rule. An article on the AndroidAuthority.com website breaks it all down. Well, I don't know about you, but in the past, while attempting to cancel various subscriptions, mostly streaming services, it was almost impossible to do so online. You were always forced to talk to a customer service representative who would either beg you not to cancel by offering you discounts which would expire within a certain time period, try and upsell you and get even more money from you, or just be nasty to you, making the whole process horrible. With this new rule, if you are able to subscribe to a service online, you have to be able to cancel that service online. Well, this is just common sense and should have been a thing a long, long time ago. Unfortunately, companies have 6 months to comply with this rule. I'll be canceling my DirecTV subscription any day now, and just know I'll have to chat with one of those customer disservice agents. Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that.
No.
Tech I'm using. As I mentioned in the introduction, I celebrated a birthday on Saturday. Thank you. I really, really thank you. Yeah, I made yet another successful trip around the sun. These days, birthdays are just another excuse for me to buy some new tech, which is something I can get behind celebrating after all. After getting the proper approval from the one whom must be obeyed, I decided to go for the just-released Aura Generation 4 Smart Ring. Though this new generation only has modest upgrades versus my current Generation 3, the promise of better comfort overrode the concerns I had. My last two Aura rings were purchased directly from Aura, and that's a shout-out to my daughter Jessica who gifted them to me. However, this time I decided to purchase the ring from Amazon. And there were three reasons for this. Amazon's price is a little less than Aura's. Amazon's delivery would be faster. And I had a $50 Amazon gift card hanging around collecting dust. Before you purchase an Aura ring, or any other smart ring for that matter, you first have to order and get a sizing kit. For the Aura 3, I didn't have to do this because there were no physical differences between the Generation 3 and the Generation 2. Well, that's not so with the Generation 4. Instead of the sensors used for measurements mounted on the inside surface of the ring as this was done previously, the Generation 4 has these sensors recessed into the inside surface. This makes sizing different than before. I noticed on Amazon that the ring sizing kit had standard prime 2-day delivery, while the ring itself had overnight delivery. So I ordered the ring sizing kit on Tuesday, October 15th, which would have had me taking delivery of the kit on Thursday the 17th. I figured I could determine the proper size and place the order for the ring that evening, and have my new piece of tech by Friday at the latest Saturday. Then I could tell you all about how great or not so great the Aura Ring 4 was or wasn't.
Wrong.
Yeah, things didn't go as planned. First, the delivery date of the sizing kit slipped to Friday by 10 p.m. Well, that time came and went, with Amazon now saying it would be delivered by the 20th of October.
What?
Ruining everything I had planned. On Friday, I checked the status again, and the expected delivery date slipped until October 21st. Now, the number one reason I pay what is now a hefty yearly fee for Amazon Prime is for the 2-day delivery. Further tracking the shipment, I see that my item arrived in New York on Wednesday afternoon. Then it left the Amazon distribution center that evening, and then it arrived in New Jersey Friday morning. I currently reside in New York, so why has it been shipped to New Jersey?
I don't know.
Well, I was pleasantly surprised yesterday when the sizing kit showed up, 2 days before the new expected date. Well, I quickly sized my finger and promptly ordered the ring. It showed up early this morning, so I haven't had time to really check it out yet. First impressions are, the ring is lighter than the older generations. The black color I ordered is actually black, not the dark bronze-looking black I ordered last time. The charger is much nicer than the last, and though it's made in Estonia, it's a product of Finland. I hadn't realized that before. I wonder if there is a Nokia connection somewhere in there. I'll update you in more detail in the next episode. Now back to the story. This isn't the first time that I've had items ordered through Amazon misrouted, but lately this has been happening more often. Just last June, I ordered an item from Amazon which promised 1-day shipping. Well, 2 days later, it had actually managed to make it to my local Amazon distribution center, only to be shipped off, again, to New Jersey. I wound up canceling that order because it would have arrived too late for its intended use. And that was the Luit Connect 2 audio interface that I chronicled in previous episodes. Because of this current delay, I was rethinking the purchase of the new Aura Ring, and if the sizing kit didn't show up as early as it did, I might have just talked myself out of doing so. The Aura Ring isn't a cheap item. I could have probably just gotten along with my current Aura Ring just fine. Aura is still supporting the Generation 3, unlike the Generation 2, which support for was promptly dropped once the 3 was introduced. With the luster of a new shiny bauble now restored, I have something to play with for a bit. Oh, my son did give me a Maono Microsoft Boom Arm, which was a pleasant surprise, and of which I'm using to record this episode. So my birthday wasn't a total bust. Entertainment news! Another week, another streaming service raising its subscription prices. It seems like once one service raises their prices, all the others follow suit quickly. According to AndroidAuthority.com, this week's price gouger is again Disney Plus. Hey, didn't Disney Plus just raise the rates earlier in the year? Well, the basic ad-supported tier's monthly price will rise from $7.99 per month to $9.99 per month, Well, the premium plan goes from $13.99 per month to $15.99 per month. Yeah, that's a $2 increase for both tiers. These streaming services attempt to justify these all-too-frequent price increases by promising new and improved content, which usually never arrives. After purging a lot of streaming services just before I retired a couple of years ago, yeah, I'm looking at having a new round of purges. The first one on my list is DirecTV Now, which is happening real soon now, which will be replaced with a basic local channel streaming service. Peacock is also a goner. I may watch one movie a month on that service. I only kept it around because it only cost me $24 annually, but now they want to charge me $80 annually. And that's for the ad-supported tier. Well, Spotify is again on the chopping block because I just hardly use it. With all the problems I have with Amazon's Prime delivery lately, and the company adding even more advertising to their previous ad-free video service, I'm considering getting rid of them too. I will be keeping Hulu and Netflix, though. Hulu has a lot of content my lovely wife and I consume, while Netflix has become our go-to last resort option. If we can't find anything worth watching on any other service, we go to Netflix and usually find something. I get Paramount Plus free because I'm a Walmart Plus subscriber, and because I'm a customer of T-Mobile, I get the MLB TV service gratis. Cutting the cord once promised freedom and money saving, but now it's getting more expensive than even cable. Podcast news. I'm always trying to simplify the production workflow of this podcast. Plugin company iZotope released a product called VEA, spelled V-E-A, earlier in the year. Well, I downloaded the trial version to give it a spin, and I'm using it exclusively in the production of this episode. Normally, I use 5 separate plugins from 3, sometimes 4 different companies in production. Now, my ears aren't what they used to be, having been subjected to jet engine noise and especially loud heavy metal concerts for most of my adult life, both of which have, of course, taken their toll. So what sounds good to these tired old ears may not sound the same but those with normal hearing. Realizing this, I'm relying on the AI of VEA, or VEA, to shape the sound of this episode with only slight tweaking from me. If you can let me know if the audio on this episode sounds as good or better, or perhaps worse than the previous ones, well, you'd be doing me a solid. Drop me a line at ofntpodcast@gmail.com if you can. I'd really appreciate it. One of the first public radio launch podcasts, This American Life, has run into a bit of financial trouble. Eventually, the podcast spun off from NPR at the dawn of Podcasting Incorporated, eventually winding up with the former newspaper of record, the New York Times. Recently, the Times put most of their podcasts behind a paywall and jettisoned the This American Life podcast. While too late to go home to Mother NPR, who are having their own problems with podcasting, NPR decided to represent the orphaned show in regards to ad sales. Unfortunately for This American Life, the podcast ad market is currently in the dumpster, so producer Ira Glass is launching a premium subscription for the show. Good luck with that, bro. Unless a listener really believes in what you're doing, well, they're not going to chip in no matter what, quote, premium content, unquote, you promise. The market for the subscription-modeled podcast has fallen off, and Apple subscription podcasts have the receipts, or rather, lack of receipts, to prove it. If you haven't noticed, things are tough outside of the NPR bubble Mr. Glass most likely resides in. Listeners just don't have the extra cash to spend, especially when there are so many podcasts out there that are actually better than This American Life. To his credit, Mr. Glass operated on what can be considered a shoestring budget, well, at least for live shows. He does have access to NPR studios, though, and I'm sure they're expensive to rent time from. Also, having 36 production staff members on board isn't cheap either. My advice, for what it's worth, is to ditch the expensive NPR studios and personnel and hire some young gun to do all your audio production while using those savings for a decent audio interface and microphones. You know, I'm not getting any joy from seeing an old, established podcast faltering. This American Life was a trailblazer, but over the years went independent, figuring there was big money to be made, which at first, well, there was. Things changed, and NPR and their ilk are the ones who changed it, and in my opinion, not for the better. Self-described radio futurologist and podcast industry maven, James Kreidlin, posted an interesting article on his blog recently. Mr. Kreidlin attends numerous broadcast and podcast conferences and is the guest on many of the various panels they have. While at a recent public broadcaster conference in Canada, he tackled the current trend of public broadcasters worldwide moving towards exclusivity, a move probably due to the decline in ad revenue. These public, and in most cases I use that word lightly, broadcasters and podcasters are moving their podcast content to their own apps, and sometimes behind a paywall. This despite getting much of their funding from taxpayers' money. Mr. Kreidlin tells the tale of a representative of Swedish public radio bragging about pulling their most popular shows off third-party apps, forcing you to download their app in order to listen to them. I'm sure a monthly stipend is involved also. The rep bragged that none other than Daniel Ek, the CEO of Spotify, turned up at his office within 2 hours of taking that action. The panel's audience was impressed by this flex. Kreidlin points out that Mr. Ek is on record as saying exclusives don't work for creators, and he should know because Spotify tried its hand at signing the biggest podcast to Spotify and losing a bunch of money doing so when it was all said and done. I agree with Mr. Kreidlin on this subject. Taxpayer-funded public radio podcasts and broadcasts should be disseminated on as many platforms as it can. These new-age public radio execs, and I'm looking at you, National Public Radio, BBC, and others, seem to be attempting to take the public out of public radio. For them, it's all about... In regular Podcasting Incorporated news, RainNews.com says that OG podcast hosting service Libsyn has hired ex-Spotify exec Brendan Monahan. Monahan was the co-founder of Megaphone, which was acquired by Spotify for a heap of cash back in 2020. Over the years, Libsyn appeared to be suffering a slow death. The company's software was archaic, and their pricing was far above their competitors who offered a better value. In order to stay afloat, prior management partnered with a Chinese company, Sight Unseen, and that company turned out to be nothing more than a content pirating outfit. New management came in and had to sue in order to get back shares of the company from the now jailed members of that Chinese-based company. Even newer management has recently come in and made some significant changes to Libsyn, and that's slowly turning the ship around. With this hire of a very successful industry executive, Libsyn has a better outlook going forward. However, the damage has been done. Libsyn lost most of its top shows a couple of years ago en masse, and that was at the beginning of the rise of the podcast industrial complex. The music is playing on this crisp autumn evening, signaling the imminent finish of episode 240 of the OFNT podcast. Perhaps there'll be two more episodes produced here in old New York. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed making it for you. If you like what you heard, you can make a donation using the link in the show notes. Any and all donations will be greatly appreciated. You can always reach me at ofntpodcast@gmail.com if you're so inclined. I'd enjoy hearing from you. Remember, don't listen to what they say. Watch what they do. You know, it's not quite Halloween yet, so why are you still milling around here? I've got a busy week ahead, so get off my lawn. Stay skeptical. I'm out.
See ya.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin, too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue one last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.